Welcome to Todd and Preston's Drive Time Chat. The car ride is imaginary, but the conversation is real.
Greetings, discerning listeners, and welcome back to another episode of the Discerning Geeks Portal, the podcast that is having to wing it yet again. I am one of your hosts, Todd, and joining me as always is Preston. Preston, how's it going?
Greetings and salutations, listeners. It is the Oppenheimer to Todd's Barbie. Once again here in the passenger seat as we take you down the highway of life. Buckle up, be safe, and let's get this ride going.
Now, in what way do I resemble Barbie?
I mean, you know, you're kind of sculpted. You're thinner than I am, for sure. You're thinner than Dave or I.
Yeah, I think I'm gaining some weight lately, though. I'm having to look at the calorie counter on my Fitbit more here lately, and trying to do some more walking and burning some calories.
Nice. I've been going back to the gym more, and you know, I'm trying to. My upper body is very well developed, and my lower body looks like one of those Ethiopians that's been starving.
Oh no!
Yeah, my legs are very anemic, so I've been trying to work on the elliptical.
Yeah. So how's that going?
It's going pretty good. You know, been doing all right with it. I wouldn't say that I'm anywhere close to being able to enter a marathon or anything, but I'm doing all right with it.
Yeah, you're doing better than me. I really need to go to the gym sometime.
It's time now to turn this mush into muscles.
I don't want to say how long ago I got a gym membership and still haven't used it. Yeah, the less said about that, the better.
I mean, that is, you know, Planet Fitness's business model is just, hey, it's a cheap gym membership. You want a gym membership, right? Everyone has been like self-conscious about their body. So like, here's like a $10 gym membership. Don't you want it? Yeah, you want it. Sign up. And then you just forget about it. You
know? Yeah.
It's the Netflix model of fitness.
It's almost like a tax at this point. You know, if you're not going to work out, then you deserve to pay this $10 a month for no reason.
I mean, you know, if only it would actually go to, like, I don't know, maybe funding better health options for people, or, you know, making the workday shorter so that, you know, we don't have to choose between, well, do I want to, you know, cook food? Or do I want to go to the gym?
Yeah. Yeah.
But hey, that's not why we're here today. We don't mean to make everything political. So why don't we get started with the writer's strike?
Yeah, that's definitely a good, relevant topic. Real quick before we do dive in, part of the reason is just me and Preston. Andrew is preoccupied on the weekends. I think he's got a little bit of a summer job going. Plus, he's a teenager. He's got probably more than a life than we do. And then also, Dave was going to join us tonight, so we were planning on doing a different topic that three of us could do. But Dave was on his way home from somewhere, and there were delays, and he started feeling sick along the way. So for kind of a combination of reasons, he's not with us tonight, and he might be joining later. So maybe our second episode that we record tonight, if we record one, because we didn't even talk about that ahead of time. But if we do a second, maybe he'll be here for that. If not, then maybe this is it. I don't know. But I guess, yeah, so we'll dive in talking about the strike. I'm supportive of the writers and actors because it sounds like they have some legitimate concerns and complaints. And so I'm not an expert on this topic, but it does sound like the strike is a good thing. At the same time, it sucks. There's yet another delay to all of our shows.
It's not fun for us as consumers, but the worker needs to take this stance now. Like, yeah. A lot of what they're fighting for is like better, you know, royalties from streaming, which is where all entertainment is going. Better, you know, protections against, you know, frivolous AI, excuse me, which is drastically important. If you've paid any attention at all to our folk heroes that have existed in the entirety of America, one out of every four is always a man versus machine story.
Yeah.
You know, John Henry, Casey Jones, a little bit of Johnny Appleseed, a little bit, you know, Paul Bunyan. All of this is just preparing us for the reality that eventually the machines will take our jobs.
Yeah, and it's kind of interesting. It's not happening in the way you might think, because, you know, you mentioned the way that it's portrayed in movies. It's not like the robots are going to start, you know, firing at us and dropping bombs and stuff like that. It's going to be more of just, they just kind of take over in subtle ways. I mean, in a way, it's already kind of happening. It has been for a while, but it's just going to keep on going. And you mentioned the whole AI thing. I don't know how true it is. I haven't done a deep dive on fact checking anything, but supposedly one or more of the companies, the production studios, have proposed having actors and voice artists come in getting paid for just like an hour or two of work for to have their voice recorded and then to have their voice used in perpetuity with no royalties or residuals or anything like that paid later. And so basically a person is just kind of giving up their voice and their performance for life for only an hour or two of work. Apparently, from what I've seen, there's no exaggeration of that is literally what they're proposing. And so, yeah, it kind of makes sense that the actors would want to strike out against that. And I've seen different levels of actors give interviews and do videos on TikTok and stuff like that. And it's all different levels. It includes people like Matt Damon, who are probably pretty well off, who could probably retire. Maybe I don't know. Maybe even he isn't that rich, but even he is in support of it, because sure, there are some actors that are super famous and at the tip top of the scale, but they're just kind of like the peak of the iceberg. There are just thousands, if not tens of thousands, maybe millions of actors that are just really super low down on the totem pole and living paycheck to paycheck and sometimes struggling to do that. I've seen at least one TikTok video where I've seen an actor or actress talking about how they do commercials, but sometimes they might get booked for a TV show. If they're lucky, they might even have a scene in a movie or something like that. But then they're going a month or two, if not 6 months at a time, without work. And sometimes they have to have a side job as a waiter, waitress, bartender. There have been times where somebody's been on maybe a soap opera, and right after that, they have to go to their bartending job, and somebody sees them bartending and is like, wait, I just saw you on TV. And so, yes, there's a certain level of glamour and riches to certain levels of actors, but it's not everybody. There are a lot of actors that are working day to day, just like the rest of us, and not even day to day. Like I said, the nature of their business is they work in spurts. And so they have to get paid as well as possible when they do the work, because there are gaps in between. And sometimes it's not enough. So yes, even they have to kind of demand things now and then.
Again, to use the plethora of wrestling knowledge that I have collected over the years, it's very much an instance of all of the scummy things that Vince McMahon does as a businessman. Like, the wrestlers are considered independent contractors, so they don't count as employees on the roll because he doesn't want to pay for their insurance. But they can't go work anywhere without his approval because they're contracted. Mm-hmm. And like you said, there was once a female wrestling champion for TNA. She won the title on that Thursday. And by the weekend, there were, you know, posts online of, here's ODB at the bar. She, you know, bartends at, working for tips as the TNA World Hit or TNA Women's Champion, which you think would be a well-paying gig, but, you know, because of the cost of the insurance for wrestlers, because A, wrestling companies usually don't want to pay you what you're worth at all. They're going to try to skim you out of everything they possibly can. She's got to work these other jobs, and mm-hmm. same sort of thing goes for all of these actors and actresses that are, you know, working what maybe like bit parts, and you know, you see them all the time. They have lines and all that, but they're just surviving day to day like the rest of us. And where they really make their money are on the royalties and everything. And I think I saw that the difference between a streaming royalty and a TV royalty, like there was some actress and she's on Always Sunny in Philadelphia as like a waitress. And she's like, yeah, so for every day I get 20 cents every time someone watches that, you know, the episodes I'm in, the entirety of the show, any episode, 20 cents a day.
Yeah.
Versus something like $20 for when it reruns on FX or something, one of the cable channels.
Ooh.
And that disparity is really what they're trying to close.
Yeah.
And I think it's a, you know, a good idea, because if they don't do it now, there will be zero money in acting in a few years.
Yeah. And the same goes for writing, because writers also get residuals, and they went on strike before the actors. There was something else I was going to say, and then I lost my train of thought.
Todd tried to get his train of thought back, but the train totally derailed.
Shall we move on to the list of projects that have been delayed because of these strikes?
Yes. Yeah. I'm interested in that. Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. According to Wikipedia, the following list of things have been delayed because of the strike going on. First, it's a very long list, so I'm going to try to limit it to things that I know both of us and our audience will care about. The Blade movie, pre-production paused ahead of planning. Filming starts in June 2023. Production will resume upon conclusion of the strike. That's pretty big. That's a Disney movie. Next up, we have Superman Legacy. James Gunn has suspended writing until the end of the strike. Next up for Disney, we have The Thunderbolts. The Thunderbolts movie is pre-production paused, and filming will resume upon conclusion. Finally, the Spider-Man No Way Home sequel is halted until conclusion of the strike as well. So those are major tentpoles that are just frozen. Now, TV is just a massive list. For Todd, 1923, filming has been delayed indefinitely.
What was that again?
1923.
Okay.
Andor season 2 has been ceased until the end of the strike. We have Blade Runner. The Blade Runner show has been paused until the end of the strike. Let's see. The Boys has also been the release date depends on the time upon which the Writer Guilds of America strike ends. Yes. Let's see. We have a bunch of cop shows. All the cop shows are on delay. Citadel season 2 is delayed. Daredevil Born Again on Disney Plus. And that has been frozen, shut down due to picketing. All right. We have, Days of Our Lives. That's pretty big. Shut down Days of Our Lives. Last of Us season 2. That's paused until the end of the strike. The Lord of the Rings show is paused until the end of the strike. Stranger Things season 5, that show's never going to come out. Postpone indefinitely.
Yes, kids are going to be in college.
No, they'll be full grown adults by the time it finishes. You're going to have to like hire their kids or something. I don't know. Let's see. Wednesday season 2 has been delayed. That's not a good one for me. Yellow Jackets season 3 has been delayed. As for anything to do with Disney right now, it's all, you know, paused until the strike ends. Everything in production. The only thing that is completed according to this list right here is Good Burger 2.
Okay.
So Good Burger 2. Oh, excuse me. And the Ocean's 11 prequel. So it's Todd will have something to watch.
What?
Yeah, there's apparently an untitled Ocean's 11 prequel that the screenplay was completed prior to the strike, and they're fast-tracking it.
Wow. That's the one thing I'm upset by.
Really?
Yeah. Wow. I didn't know that there was an Ocean's 11 prequel, but now that I know there is one, I want it now. Well, there again, it's a prequel.
It's a prequel. Oh. It's called Oceans.
No. Okay. Maybe I'm not so excited now.
Yeah. It'll be set in 1960s Europe. Nothing else is much known. Margot Robbie is attached. Jay Roach will be director. How's that sounding? Good, bad?
Jay Roach only sounds vaguely familiar, so I can't remember what else he's done. And Margot Robbie, I'm kind of mixed on.
Yeah, and apparently Ryan Gosling was in negotiations.
Okay. Yeah, he's okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. Well, got my hopes up and they're dashed again.
All right. And then down here in television, we have American Horror Story will be completed, which, you know.
Wow, that's still on?
Oh, yeah, man. It just goes on forever. You know, that's the thing. Let's see. Interview with a Vampire filming commenced prior to the strike, but it's been suspended. So Good Omens season 2 was completed prior to the strike. Hopefully that gets released. I enjoyed that show.
Okay. Yeah. I kind of like season 1. It was pretty good.
Yeah, season 1 was fun. I enjoy it. It's kind of that dry British humor that's like massive cosmic consequence, but really all we care about is Queen and sushi. Yeah, it's very British. Wow, they're making an Among Us TV show. Good God. We're really bad on running out of ideas. Yeah.
While you're still looking stuff up, one of the things that just bugs me about TV in general right now, Good Omens season 1 came out, what, 4 or 5 years ago? Just forever ago. Now, granted, yes, there was a pandemic, and now we got the strike and everything. And so, yeah, I get it. Stuff happens. But it just bugs me that we live in a time when TV isn't exactly TV. I miss the days of, you know, you have a season finale in the late spring, early summer, and then in late summer, early fall, you've got a season premiere. And, you know, I know that seasons are shorter nowadays, so you might have to have a bigger gap in between, but just whole calendar years between seasons, it's like it's not even TV. It's like you're waiting. That's the same amount of time you will wait for a movie between seasons of stuff. It's just, I don't know. TV just isn't what it used to be.
Well, see, that goes hand in hand with the fact that TV now isn't TV, right? Like, right. Movie special effects go into these shows now. Like, movie quality, CGI, and special effects go into these shows, and those take forever. Like, people don't quite understand the amount of time and just manpower it takes to create a lot of those special effects.
Yeah.
And it's great for us because the quality is there on the screen, but it's horrible if you want to have something to watch consistently. You know what I mean? You really have to have like 4 or 5 streaming services, and you've got to know when the new season of X drops, and you got to know when Y drops. So you have X and Y to watch while you're waiting on Z to finish, you know?
Yeah. Well, I'm curious, do you feel like that extra high level of quality is actually necessary? Or would you be willing to sacrifice a little bit of quality for having more TV come out more often and maybe even have longer seasons?
I feel like quality is the important thing. You know, I feel like I would rather watch something that's very high quality and then, you know, just go without than watch something that's just terrible, but just have it all the time. Now, I say this, and I, as a horror fan, I know that there are cheap, low budget horror movies that I love that I'll watch that don't have the quality of a Marvel production or, you know, your standard event streaming service television show. Those experiences are more, let's say, communal to me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like you have a community that you go and you talk to about these things, and it's sort of building upon that. And it's not a, it's like going to a picnic versus going to a fine restaurant and eat, you know, eating a quality steak versus eating a hamburger and drinking Coca-Cola with your buddies, you know, out back and, like, you know, watching somebody bust their knee playing Frisbee or something.
Okay. All right. Yeah, that's a good analogy. Yeah.
Well, there again, okay, where do you stand?
I definitely feel like, as nice as it is to see these shows with this super high quality, and to a certain extent it might be semi-necessary now that we've got HD. You know, back in the days of standard definition, you can kind of get away with a picture not being totally perfect. And under HD, you've got to be a little bit more careful. And, you know, there's so many pixels, you got to put out a better picture and stuff. But sometimes I think some shows just go overboard and they don't have to. I kind of feel that way about the movies sometimes too. Like the recent animated Spider-Man movie, Spider-Man, not Into the Spider-Verse, Beyond the Spider-Verse. I think it was a little bit over the top. And in fact, I said it about the first movie too. They could have backed off on the visual stuff and just told the story with, and still used a lot of the special techniques they use, but just not gone absolutely overboard. But I feel the same way about TV shows, and I've got a really good example for proof of this. It concluded season one a couple months ago, so it's not on right now, but there was a show called The Ark on Sci-Fi, and it's the first show on Sci-Fi that I've watched in a few years. I kind of gave up on that channel, then all of a sudden I heard about the show and I gave it a chance, and it was really good. And the show has a few problems. Some of their storytelling techniques, some of their computer graphics are a little bit wonky, some of their use of science is a little bit wonky, but the characters are actually interesting. The storylines are interesting. They use a few tropes, but I can kind of get past that. I like the subplots. It's actually a really great show, and it looks like they make it for about $10. And that's a bit of an exaggeration, because I'm sure that every episode probably costs tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of dollars. Who knows, maybe even $1 million an episode. But it just doesn't look like it compared to some of the other shows that are on TV nowadays, and especially for a show that takes place in space. And the thing is, I'm okay with it, because I followed the story, and the story was interesting. The characters were interesting, and that was what was important. And I've been thinking for a while, some of these shows could back off on all of their fancy computer graphics and their stellar cinematography and do something a little bit more basic and cheaper, as long as the story and characters are good. And The Ark proves it. So if anybody out there hasn't checked out The Ark, it's actually on Peacock right now. And it actually did get renewed for season two. I thought for sure it was going to get canceled, because I was assuming I was the only person on the planet actually watching it. But apparently, like, another dozen or two dozen people out there are watching it, and it did get renewed for season two. But I would bet that part of the reason Sci-Fi did renew it is because it seems inexpensive. I'm assuming it's inexpensive. If it's right, they're probably saving money by doing it, rather than like a Battlestar Galactica spinoff or, you know, Babylon 5's whatever. They're probably making the show on the cheap, and just enough people watch it are like, hey, why not? So, yeah, I wouldn't mind seeing more shows get a little bit cheaper. Not super cheap. They don't need to get cheesy cheap, but just back off a little bit, save a little bit of money, and then have either more episodes or come out more often, you know, not have a whole calendar year in between seasons. And also maybe not be so expensive that a network is more willing to renew you for another season.
That is a good point. I think, if you're a cop show or you're telling a detective story, you don't need to spend millions of dollars. I mean, you need, you know, yeah, I know nowadays you always need like the car chase scene and the, you know, shoot 'em up, bang, bang portion of the program. But, you know, it might be fun to do like a Rockford Files. There were car chases because, you know, it was a detective show in the 70s, so there were car chases because everyone did car chases. There were still just a lot of character moments in like four or five different settings in the early days, and you could kind of get a grip on the whole plot and everything, and solid writing. You know, that was really all you needed.
Yeah.
But like, if you're going to do a sci-fi show or a, you know, fantasy show, you're at the mercy of your special effects team.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause you do have to do something.
Yeah. You gotta do something. Is it impossible to do good special effects on the cheap? No. But what is impossible is to do something that people haven't seen before on the cheap.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Here again, in the horror realm, one of the big things over the past few years, and I believe I've spoken about this before, was the back rooms. And the back rooms are all about, well, what if reality has like asset storage? And you fall into the back rooms, you noclip out of reality, and you end up in asset storage. What's there? What does that look like? And how do you get out? Is the basic premise. And, you know, that started as a YouTube series. Like the guy that created that was just like I believe he was a film student. If not, he was just a student. And he made it for, I want to say maybe $60,000 to $100,000. And oh, wow. That thing looks amazing.
Yeah.
It's very clear when he does use computer graphics, but you know, the ability to do something that cheap, that well, is quite impressive.
Yeah.
Which leads me to, why not figure out a way to incorporate all these dead malls in your television shows?
Oh, yeah.
Hollywood.
Yeah.
Figure out something to do with all this dead retail space. We won't get on the soapbox of the dead malls and my utter fascination with the pyramids of suburbia.
Wouldn't it be interesting if somebody were to shoot a TV show or movie in Oak Hollow Mall in nearby High Point?
Man, I would be all about that. Because, I mean, okay, you know, because you grew up around here, Oak Hollow Mall at one point in time was considered the fancy mall. Like, Haynes Mall was for the working man.
Yeah.
And you went to Oak Hollow Mall when you wanted to be fancy.
Greetings, discerning listeners. This is Todd, the editor, cutting in semi-briefly. First, thank you for tuning in and bearing with us as we try to revive a more consistent recording schedule. The episode before this one came out late, partially because of some audio cleanup I had to do on that one. And this episode is long enough, I might be splitting it up into two parts to hold us over until the next time Dave and or Andrew can join us. I guess we'll find out later if I'll do that. Also, I might be cutting in more than once during these one or two episodes because I've already thought of a few times I can elaborate on our topics, including this one about the dead or near-dead malls. I forgot to mention to Preston that in 2019, on the way home from Dragon Con, I took a slight detour through Duluth, Georgia, to visit the Gwinnett Place Mall, which served as a filming location for the 1980s Starcourt Mall in Season 3 of Stranger Things. I took a selfie standing in front of one of the entrances, which was clearly used for the exterior of Starcourt Mall. Inside, I could tell the mall was declining and mostly empty, which reminded me of Oak Hollow Mall in High Point, North Carolina, before it finally closed a few years ago. Gwinnett Place still had a handful of open shops and one or two anchor stores. I could tell by the architecture and decorating that it somewhat resembled Starcourt. There was one particular wing of the mall that had been used for the Starcourt interior, but there were large wooden barriers up to prevent or at least discourage people from going in that area. By that time, I think I had heard the Starcourt set dressing had already been dismantled to prevent theft or vandalism, but I was able to peek through a crack in the barrier, and I could tell that some of the interior of that area was still a little more 80s looking than the rest of the mall, thanks to the filming that went on there. So the production of Stranger Things didn't put everything back the way it was, and considering the decline of the mall, they probably weren't required to. I could see a single folding chair in the middle of that area. I can't remember if someone was sitting in it or not, but that must have been recent enough after Stranger Things Season 3 that they must have needed a single guard to kind of shoo people away who wanted more than just a peek like I was getting. If anyone is interested enough, maybe I'll post the photos that I took while I was there. Okay, back to the recording.
And Haynes Mall is still going, and Oak Hollow Mall is a ghost town owned by Nito Cobain, who is the president of High Point University. You know, we don't know where that all heads, but I have a theory he's going to end up being a Bond villain. I don't know, but yeah.
Well, now you were going through the list and you just said cop shows. Do you have the list of cop shows? Because I'm wondering about one specifically.
Give me the name and I can look and see.
Okay, The Rookie.
Let's see. The Recruit. The Really Loud House. The Rookie Season 6 premiere pushed to mid-season with possibility of a shorter season.
Ugh. Okay.
I'm sorry, Todd.
Yeah. If we get into TV shows that we're watching later, that's one I was going to bring up. Just when I get into it, it gets delayed.
Yeah, I know, right? Wednesday's, you know, and delayed, which was something I was looking forward to. Superman and Lois, that's delayed.
That's a good show.
That was pretty solid. Stranger Things, again, never going to happen. The Penguin, there it is. Yeah, The Penguin production shut down repeatedly due to picketing before being suspended for the strike. Yeah, I was looking forward to that show. Yeah, I'm sad.
I've never heard of that one.
It's about the Batman villain, the Penguin, mm-hmm. and his rise to power.
Okay. Any star attached to that?
I believe it's connected to the Batman. Let me see if it has the star. Yeah, it has Colin Farrell.
Huh, okay.
It's connected to the Batman movie that they released 3 years ago. Yeah. God. Oh, wow. No, 2 years ago.
Okay.
Excuse me.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
Yeah.
So you gave a big list. What percentage of that are you kind of disappointed is getting delayed? Like, do you watch half or more of those shows, or just a few, or none, or?
Well, I mean, I watch like The Peacemaker. I watch, you know, House of the Dragon, things like that. I watch, as I say, Wednesday, The Last of Us, Handmaid's Tale, Good Omens. I would be interested in watching that. I want to see what's going on with that Daredevil show.
Yeah.
I'd be interested in Andor season 2 and The Mandalorian, of course. And Ghosts. Yeah, Ghosts. Oh, man. That show is so good. Ghosts is fun. I like that show.
What is that about?
This couple inherits an old mansion out it looks like the upper northeast, but it could even be, you know, Asheville or whatever. I think it is the upper northeast. But the couple inherits this mansion and they go up there and the wife falls down the stairs.
Oh.
And when she falls down the stairs and bops a electrical socket, she gets electrocuted. And when she wakes up, she can see all the ghosts that haunt the house. And they're all just pretty chill. They're not like scary ghosts. They're all just like chill people that are just trapped there.
Okay, yeah. This is the comedy on CBS, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I haven't watched it, but I've heard about it, and I've seen the previews and commercials. So yeah, now I know what you're talking about. Yeah.
Yeah, Ghosts is great. I enjoy that show. It's a lot of fun. I'm sad about The Boys. The Boys not. That's a show I enjoy. It's definitely rough around the edges, but I enjoy it because, you know, it's goofy and weird, and I kind of like, you know, the kind of offbeat stuff just to break up the monotony. That's what bores me about the cop hospital lawyer show dynamic is just, it's the same thing. You could literally get one of these jobs and just live this life day after day after day. I feel like it's celebrating the mundane horrors of our current civilization.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's where we kind of stand with the strike. Todd, would you like to take us to our next topic, or do you have more to say here?
No. And wow, we've been on this one topic for over 30 minutes, so we probably should move on. Now, you're better at coming up with these topics, so I don't know if I have that many full-fledged topics. I think you came up with most of them. I do want to mention Babylon 5.
Shocker.
But I'll do that later. I wouldn't mind talking just a little bit about TV shows that we're watching right now. Now, I have to admit, some of what I'm watching right now isn't technically on the air right now. I've gone through two major binge watches lately. And then there are a few shows that I'm on that I am watching right now that are kind of okay. So just to get the ball rolling, as far as shows that are on right now, are you into Secret Invasion, Outlander, The Blacklist, or Star Trek Strange New Worlds?
I've been keeping up with Secret Invasion. Mm-hmm. I haven't seen the whole thing yet.
Okay.
But I've been keeping up with it. I think it's a great show. I think Emile Clarke is doing great work there. I think Samuel L. Jackson is amazing. I loved the scene with Fury and Brody in that restaurant. And Brody's just like, listen, man, I got to shut you down. And Jackson tries to pull, you know, the just believe me, this thing is coming.
Yeah.
That's a fun scene and hard to really pull off with the kind of nuance and special feeling you get there, especially for a Disney show. Like that felt very adult. I was very proud that they were able to pull that off.
Yeah.
And as I say, Emilia Clarke is doing a great job in this role. Sam Jackson's great overall. I recommend the show. I'm trying to slow roll watching the whole thing, so I have something to look forward to. You know, like when I'm bored or I forget about it, and then I'm like, oh yeah, I have a new thing of Secret Invasion, and I can watch that.
How urgently do you feel like you need to watch it, though? Do you feel like it's appointment viewing, like you want to watch it as soon as possible, or is it more like, oh good, they're a new episode, I'll get to it whenever I can?
To me, appointment television died with the end of Game of Thrones. You know,
yeah,
so it's pretty much one of those. Yay, there's a new episode. I'll watch it when I have time. That's the beautiful thing about like social media and the social group. You know, outside of taxes and wrestling, I can pretty much slow roll any kind of entertainment that I want to.
Mm-hmm.
Because people, generally my friends and social circles won't spoil things for me. You know, they'll kind of let me watch things at my own pace and then come to them and be like, hey, I just saw this thing, blah, blah, blah. That's been pretty good. Now, Todd, I know that you're more dialed in and have more of the, oh no, it might get spoiled for me kind of thing. So is it appointment viewing for you?
It is almost by accident only because, well, halfway, not completely. There for a while, what I was doing with these Disney shows that get released at midnight Pacific time, 3 a.m. our time, is if I was really into them, I might try to, like if I were to wake up in the middle of the night, just go ahead and watch it and then try to go back to sleep. Or if I wake up early enough the next morning, watch it before work. Now it's getting to the point where I'm just like, oh yeah, that's on. I'll get to it tonight after work. But I could be even less enthusiastic and wait a day or two. But I do usually still like watch it right after I get done with work. So it's kind of semi-appointment television, but only because there's so little on right now. It's like, okay, this is the one show that's being released today. I guess I'll watch it because there's nothing else to watch. Either that or go back to my binge watching of old stuff. So yeah, but then sometimes even when I do that, I'm kind of disappointed after. It's like, really? I actually could have done something else during that hour. So Secret Invasion, on the good side, I totally agree with you that the performances are very good, but I say that a lot about a lot of shows right now. Sometimes that's not enough. I definitely like the aspect of the Skrulls because, as I've explained in previous episodes, I love shape-shifting as a special ability, and these Skrulls can shape-shift, and so that's kind of cool. And Samuel L. Jackson as a lead is pretty good, but the overall plot isn't totally grabbing me. And the fact that we're five episodes in and only one left, it's like, really, where are we even at in the story? Where are we going and how are we going to wrap up in one episode? I mean, in a way, I guess it won't take much to wrap up in one episode because I don't feel like the story has been very meaty in the previous five episodes. There's one other kind of minor complaint I have, but I don't want to say because it might spoil you or others if you're not caught up. But it's kind of like the show is doing something that I'm like, really, I don't know if the show is worth doing that thing that you're doing. I don't know. I don't know if I'm making much sense, but sadly, I can't share the same enthusiasm. And I've kind of felt that way about several of the Marvel and Star Wars shows recently. They haven't been as good lately. And so Disney Plus in general is kind of, I don't know, for the first time in a while, I'm actually thinking I might cancel Disney Plus for a while. So, yeah, I don't have the same enthusiasm.
Well, I'll tell you, if you're ever feeling down on Disney Plus, what you ought to do is you ought to just turn on Bluey. Yes, it's a show for children, but I'm telling you, that is a well-crafted show.
Yeah, Dave always recommends that show, too. I don't know if I can go that far.
I mean, it's 6 minutes. It's got good writing. You know, it's similar to a Looney Tunes short. You know, back in the day, like 6-7 minutes, three or four really good jokes or one really simple story that they can tell in 6 minutes.
Yeah.
Bing, bang, boom. You're in, you're out. You've laughed, you've smiled, you might have cried. And you're like, yeah, that's worth $10.
Let me see. As far as other shows I'm watching right now, Outlander is pretty good this season. So far, nothing super big or exciting has happened, but it's still pretty good. And the first few episodes, they were really kind of picking up the pace and trying to get onto other things. And the show is kind of shaken up a little bit compared to the past couple seasons. And I guess it's too soon to tell whether that's a good thing or a bad thing. The Blacklist just recently had its series finale after 10 seasons. And on a macro level, I kind of am satisfied with the way it ended up. But on a micro level, I'm not sure I totally love the series finale. It kind of ended in a weird way. And it did something that I don't like in series finales. I've talked about this before. I like it when series finales are all about saying goodbye and kind of bringing closure to things. And while that episode really did bring an ultimate sense of closure to at least one aspect or like one character, it didn't totally wrap up the overall storyline for other characters. It just kind of left them hanging. So I think it could have ended a little bit better. And then Strange New Worlds, I think it's about 6 episodes in, which isn't great because it's probably another 10-episode season. And so far, I've only liked one episode. The others have been okay. None of them have been terrible, but I really only liked one episode, and even it kind of had issues. It's weird. Like, so far, I actually feel like Strange New World season one might have actually been better than season two so far. So, anything else that you're watching that's on right now?
Well, currently speaking, I'm working my way through the new season of The Witcher that also dropped. It's pretty good thus far. You know, it really picks up on the whole Gareth and the love interest have a falling out, but they're trying to raise/protect the queen of the heir to the throne of the land that they're keeping hidden in secret and training both in fighting and in magic. So they're like, they're doing the whole divorced parents thing where they're like leaving each other notes and like trying to, you know, do what's best for the kid and coexist, but there's still like a spark there, and I'm sure that's going to be a whole thing throughout this season. Let's see what else. Ah, yes, America, have no fear. The gemstones have returned. Yes,
the gemstones.
Yeah. The Righteous Gemstones. The Righteous Gemstones is a show written by Danny McBride about mega churches. It's about a family that runs a mega church, and the seedy underbelly of the, TV preacher life.
Yeah.
And it's all done with very much a comedic aspect. And I find it hilarious because it's just all of these things that only you would know if you grew up in the South around really religious people and stuff. So like all of these little tropes that I see that wouldn't be obvious to anyone that didn't grow up in there. Like this season, the Gemstones have built a vacation resort, but the vacation resort that they're using is just, they rented Atlantis, which if you know anything, Atlantis is a resort in the Bahamas that was built, but it's like a massive multi-million dollar resort casino thing. And my family and I, we went down there one time and it's just so hilarious to see Atlantis and, you know, see what's inside of the bridge, because it's two buildings and then there's this bridge. But the bridge is the most expensive room in the whole place that they've been really trying to keep under wraps, what the room looks like and everything. Like, they won't let you film, like, even if you rent it out, they won't let you film in there because they want it on YouTube. But the HBO figured out how much money they had to give so the McBride could film inside of the bridge hotel room. It's neat for me to kind of see that thing because I've always wondered what that room looked like. But the story, well, this season, I believe, because John Goodman stars as the father of the whole thing and really one of the only sensible people there. And I tend to think they're hinting that he's gotten some kind of end-of-life diagnosis, or he feels like he's near the end.
Yeah.
All the kids are just like these arrested development, really horrible people that just have no maturity or anything because they've just been in the lap of luxury all their lives. And all they know is like the entertainment business, but the entertainment business as seen through the eyes of like the mega churches and everything. So it's just the ultimate, these are the worst people that you knew in high school and now they're adults and they run this like multi-million dollar entertainment organization. And it's hilarious. It's not exactly the best representation of the faith at all, but I would argue that there's really only a few people in that show that actually have faith and understand what the Bible says. So like, if you're going into it as, they're attacking Christianity, I would counter argue and say that they're really more attacking people that don't understand Christianity and use it to get their way or make money.
Yeah. Yeah.
If that makes sense.
So would you say it is in some ways a parody of stuff that happened in the 80s with PTL?
Oh, it is absolutely. Like, there's totally PTL references. There's like the Swagger, just every, you know, TV preacher scandal they could find or think of is crammed into this show. It's amazing.
And am I remembering correctly that Danny McBride is from North Carolina and sometimes bases some of his movies or TV shows in North Carolina?
Oh yeah. If you start watching any of Danny McBride's shows and you're just like, oh my God, this is my life. Like he did a whole show about vice principals in high school.
Mm, yeah.
And I swear to God, if you watch that show, you'll sit there and you'll be like, that's Glenn. That's literally like the same hallway structure. There's the cafeteria. That's just Glenn. He just like made the stereotypical North Carolina high school layout. Or he even went to one of the schools at the coast and said, listen, can I film here during the summer? And they just let him because it looks so much like North Carolina high schools. It's unbelievable.
Yeah, I never watched that show, but I heard about it while it was on. I might even seen some clips. So I don't remember right offhand, but I might have the vaguest memory of, yeah, it kind of resembling something you would see in a North Carolina high school.
That's something I've been watching. Of course, I've been keeping up with The Last Drive-In. you know, I know that, Todd, you're not a man of horror or any such pursuits. But I would totally recommend, you know, just binging just Joe Bob, which is like, if you can find it, I know it's on AMC Plus or whatever, but if you could like find it just on YouTube or whatever, it's totally worth the listen, because the thing that I love about the show is how deep and how down into the minutiae and the soil of these strange, weird movies that you would never think had any reason to exist, and how this weird movie about a gigantic rampaging alligator in the sewers of New York got made. It's amazing. Yeah, that's always fun. And that's really what I've been watching, other than YouTube, which is just like the nebulous, like, attention drainer of the internet, you know?
Yeah.
And there's some really great shows. Like, there's these two dudes that find like these failing chain restaurants, and they try to go to every location in the United States. Like, they did it for Rainforest Cafe.
Okay.
And that was an amazing, hour of television, is just watching them go to every Rainforest Cafe.
That sounds like the type of thing that would be at Myrtle Beach.
Oh, yeah. There absolutely had to be one at Myrtle Beach.
Yeah.
There's no way that was not there at one point. It's not at Broadway now. But it had to be there at one point.
Well, you bring up horror. I'm not a person that watches horror, but something that's kind of horror adjacent is Grimm. That's a TV show that came on approximately a decade ago, and I've been binge watching it lately. I think I've even mentioned it in a previous episode. I'm almost done with it. I'm just a few episodes away from finishing it up. And it's been an interesting run, because I knew that there was a really good string of episodes in there, maybe even a whole season, but I couldn't remember exactly when that hit. And I think it was season two. I also remember there being something that I really hated about the show, but I wasn't sure when it hit. I was hoping it was season five or six, but it actually happened as early as halfway through season four. And even though I hated it again when I watched it this time, things kind of equalize a little bit, and I still wish it didn't happen, and it kind of destroyed a character, but then they kind of sort of make up for it a little bit, and it kind of stabilizes, and everything else about the show stays good. So overall, I would still say Grimm is a great show, but wow, that second half of season four, not only this one bad thing that happens to this one character, but then there's another plot line that's going on with another character, and it's kind of stupid too. It's like that whole second half of season four just bugs me. But then when I got to season five, it kind of picked up again.
Can I make a guess?
Yeah. And just in case you're guessing something specific, this might be a spoiler for anybody who hasn't seen Grimm. So anybody who hasn't and think you might want to skip ahead a few seconds. Hi again, discerning listeners. This is Todd, the editor. As mentioned earlier, I think I will split this episode into two parts. And this may be a good place for that split for a few reasons. As you just heard, we were about to go into a slight spoiler zone for Grimm, so instead of you guessing how many seconds or minutes to skip ahead, I can edit that spoiler into the end of this episode with another warning beforehand. Second, the day after Preston and I recorded, I finished up my Grimm rewatch, and I thought I'd give you my non-spoiler review of the series finale, and also summarize my feelings about the show overall. I'll squeeze that in now before the outro music and spoiler zone. In episodes 44 and 45 of this podcast, we talked about our favorite and least favorite series finales, and we began both those episodes talking about what makes a good or bad series finale. Check out those episodes for some references I might be making while talking about the Grimm series finale. On the positive side, the Grimm series finale was exciting, had high stakes, gave each character a moment in the spotlight, had some flashbacks and did some bookending, featured the entire main cast in one of the final scenes, had some nice emotional moments, and included a nice, but brief, flash forward to a few years in the future to see what happened to the next generation of characters in the Grimm universe. On the negative side, that final episode was a little too much season finale and not enough series finale. The complexity of the plot made it a little convoluted. The special appearances of some very unexpected callback characters made it even more convoluted. And I would have preferred more time bringing some closure and or greater peek into the future for each character. In fact, I would say that's my biggest complaint. Babylon 5 is my favorite show and has my favorite series finale. That show lasted 5 seasons for a total of 110 episodes, not counting the pilot or other TV movies, and I feel it earned the privilege to have the entire final episode be a flash forward into the future, to serve as a peek into where our surviving characters ended up, and to ultimately say goodbye to the audience. And that's exactly what that entire final episode was. Grimm actually lasted 6 seasons for a total of 123 episodes. That's one more year and 13 more episodes than Babylon 5. So it also earned the privilege to have one entire episode to just say goodbye. Instead, it took most of its final episode to wrap up a storyline that was mostly formed out of its last one or two seasons. And its flash forward, 2 decades in the future, was not 43 minutes long, but only lasted 77 seconds. How long did Nick, Hank, Wu, and Renard remain police officers? Did Monroe and Rosalie stay in Portland? What happened to Trouble, Adeline, Eve, and Bud? Did anyone ever get any peace and quiet? After that one big action-packed night that nearly ended in apocalypse, we don't know. I would have liked that bit of closure. I would count Grimm's series finale as a mixed bag, maybe leaning slightly toward the positive, but with some definite disappointments. Overall, however, I think Grimm is still a great show. The cast of characters is amazing. They form a very thorough mythology of creatures. Portland, Oregon makes for a very unique and fitting setting. And there's a lot of intrigue and huge cliffhangers. After a first season of world building via mostly case of the week type storylines, the show probably peaks in season 2 with its most intense intrigue and biggest cliffhangers. The show picks up again in the last half of season 3, especially with the introduction of the Trouble character and first half of season 4. The second half of season 4 is by far the worst half season, with one previously likable character completely deconstructed and another character getting the second worst subplot of the series at the same time. While I'll never like the changes that happen to that one character, so drastic that
spoiler redacted,
the last 2 seasons are otherwise still pretty good. All things considered, I would very much recommend Grimm, especially to those who like a mix of fantasy and horror, or who are wanting something unconventional out of a cop slash detective show. In just a moment, I'll say goodbye, but after the outro music, there will be that one segment I mentioned earlier that contains the Grimm spoiler. Skip it if you don't want to know. And stay tuned for part 2, where Preston and I talk about the Nathan Fillion cop show, The Rookie, TikTok videos, the approaching animated B5 movie and B5 Blu-ray release, toys or games that we'd like to see made into movies or TV shows, Sequest, genius teenagers and sci-fi TV shows, and the movie Mac and Me. Thank you to Preston for joining me on this unplanned Drive Time Chat episode where the car ride is imaginary, but the conversation is real. Until next time, be well, be safe, just make the final episode of your long-lived TV show one big goodbye, and continue to enjoy whatever makes you a discerning geek. Thanks for joining us. May the Force always be with you, and don't forget about that spoiler after the outro music.
Is it Juliet's constant heel face turns where she like becomes the witch Wesson?
Yeah.
No, the Juliet constant heel face turns, that was the worst thing.
To clarify this comment, making this spoiler even more spoilery, Preston is referring to the character of Juliet, the girlfriend of the Grimm character Nick, becoming a hexen beast in mid-season 4. If you don't want thorough details and prefer only vague spoilers, skip ahead 52 seconds. A hexen beast is a type of Wesen in the Grimm universe with the appearance and powers of a witch, or hag. Juliet's transformation was a side effect of her participation in a magic spell that helped Nick regain Grimm abilities after losing them in late season 3. Juliet's new Hex and Beast side gave her special powers and an increasingly adversarial personality. After a few horrible things she does, there are a couple of ally characters that basically forfeit wanting to help her anymore. She's then seemingly killed, is resurrected as an assassin with nearly robotic mannerisms, starts calling herself Eve, and has a habit for wearing horrible wigs. Later, exposure to a particular magical artifact softens her personality and temporarily suppresses her Hex and Beast side. She also dumps the wigs, becomes sympathetic again, and rejoins the group, though Eve never resumes a relationship with Nick.
I can't help but wonder why they chose to do that, because I liked her character up until that point. My guess is that maybe the actress was getting bored doing the same thing, or just being a girlfriend type character. Maybe the writers want to do something. But I remember when this first happened, I looked up on the internet to see what people were thinking about it. And I did it again now during my rewatch. And I get the impression that a lot of people out there did not like the character and found her very divisive, and that they actually preferred what happened to her. And I'm like, oh, wow, I'm different from everybody else, because I felt like it really destroyed the character. I mean, quite literally, because we don't totally get Juliet back. I mean, later on, there's a little bit of a softening of this Eve character. And so we kind of get a hybrid of Eve and Juliet, which is okay. It's better than nothing, but it's like nothing in that relationship ever gets back to normal. And so I kind of feel like there's a whole element of the show that's kind of missing now, but it's still, like I said, it equalizes, it gets better. It's like, that's kind of the one dark mark on the show overall. And I'm still enjoying everything else that's happening.